Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
I'm Ray Suarez. This is On Point. Prison education works. One study found incarcerated people who took education classes had 43% lower odds of returning to prison than those who didn't. Yet many prisons ban books. Texas alone bars more than 10,000 titles. Some prison staff say material in books could inspire escape attempts or create disorder among prison populations. Many in prison reply, "Books give us hope." We're looking at books in prison for the rest of the program. You can join us on air or online. Should prisons ban books? Or just certain types of books? What opportunities should we give to incarcerated people? We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. Joining me now from New York is Christia Mercer, a professor of philosophy at Columbia University. She teaches in prison as part of Columbia University's Justice in Education initiative. You can link to her piece headlined, "Reading Gives People in Prison Hope, but Some States Want to Take Their Books Away." That's at our website, onpointradio.org. Christia, welcome to On Point.
Good to be here.
And joining me from McKinney, Texas is Jason Hernandez. At 21, he was sentenced to life in prison. In 2013, President Obama granted him clemency. He now coordinates youth outreach and program development at Grace to Change Drug and Alcohol Center. You can link to his story headlined, "I Read the New Jim Crow in Jail, It Changed My Life," at our website, onpointradio.org. Jason, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Ray.
Christia, Professor, let's begin with you. What is it that prisoners are reading, and what are the kinds of titles that various authorities have had a problem with?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting to see the way in which people, authorities, set criteria for exclusion of books. Usually the point seems to be that if the book creates or provokes anger or might create some kind of rebellion, then they're to be banned. The problem with that is that that would, you know, exclude books about the revolution, the Civil War, the, you know, major points of history. Also, it would ban books about, you know, most of American history. If the point is, like, one of the reasons to ban the new Jim Crow is that it makes a very convincing case for the relationship between institutionalized racism and the prison industrial complex, then suddenly, if you take that seriously, you ban most of America, or lots of American literature. Suddenly, the novels by Toni Morrison, for example, become dangerous. So, you know, my very strong opinion is that whatever criteria you set up to ban books, you're going to get to a point where you do something like the state of Texas did. Before too long, you're banning something like, I think they've banned 10,000 books, including, for example, the sonnets of Shakespeare. I mean, surely that's going too far.
Jason Hernandez, when you were behind bars, what did you read?
I read everything that I possibly could, right? Because in there, I mean, you don't really have... I mean, I had life without parole. So people that have life, the programs are limited to us. So they think that because you're not going home, that you don't really need an education. So whether it was a paper, National Geographic, magazine, you know, I read it. Anything that could better myself mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually.
Were you conscious, Jason, that there were things that you were not being allowed to read?
Yeah, I would say to an extent, right? I mean, you would, because we have what's called the interlibrary loan, and you put in for certain books, and you know, they what the prison does is that they reach out to schools and colleges and say, "Hey, this inmate wants this book," but then half of those requests kind of get denied when you ask for certain books.
Professor Mercer, can you read the autobiography of Malcolm X in jail? It details in terrible testimony the kinds of things that happened away from the view of guards and the way prisoners enforce the rules behind bars.
Yeah, I mean, I just think, again, as I was suggesting earlier, that it's just very difficult to know what the criteria should be. And I think, I mean, one of the problems these days is I think the incarceral system is more inclined to protect the people who work in the system as opposed to the incarcerated people themselves. I mean, I think, you know, anything that's going to get people reading, even if it's the autobiography of Malcolm X, which surely could provoke anger and dismay, might also, in fact, Jason's story is an incredible story. I'm so happy and honored to be on the same show with him. But, you know, suddenly you have people reading books and being, and as he put it very, very beautifully, it sort of understood his experience and saw his experience in a bigger context. So you read the autobiography of Malcolm X, or you read, in fact, you know, one of the wonderful books that or plays that we read in one of my courses was the Medea, an ancient play where Medea kills her children. You know, why shouldn't that be dangerous as a book to teach in prison? It's about murder, and it's about the justification for murder. And my strong feeling is that we need to let incarcerated people read everything they can get their hands on, even if part of their motivation is to sort of understand themselves and understand, let's say, the racism of the system. And that itself, like with Jason's story, will lead them to see something about their lives they hadn't seen before, and to, you know, contextualize who they are and where they are, and in most cases, begin to have a different set of goals in life than they would have had before.
Jason, let me put that to you.
Books are ever dangerous.
You heard the professor talking about basically throwing the doors of the library open. You knew a lot of different people behind bars. Were there prisoners and then prisoners? Things that would hit different people different ways? And is it really a situation where you should let everybody read everything?
Yeah, I truly believe what the professor said, that even a book as, say, for example, a book I read about Adolf Hitler, right? That book inspired me, and it's probably, you asked yourself that question, how can a book about Adolf Hitler inspire anybody? I mean, all he preached and talked about was hate, racism, and death, right? But what it showed me, a book about Adolf Hitler, what showed me was that if this man can convince a whole nation to believe in what he believed in, and if what I'm preaching and what I'm believing in is second chances, right, a fair criminal justice system, that if he can convince a whole nation, I should be able to convince a few people, if not hundreds of people, right? So even that book inspired me. And, you know, like the Jim Crow, you know, if you're talking about a book that, you know, I probably would not be here today on this phone with you, or if I would, it would be through a prison line, because that book actually, I mean, it broke me free from jail. It broke me free from my mind frame that, where I thought as a young kid that I'm Mexican, you know, we sell drugs, we go to prison, that's just part of life. I go to prison, it's filled with minorities. I just thought that's who we were as a people. And when I read the New Jim Crow, it awakened me that there are systems in place that were designed to, you know, kind of disrupt and destroy and incarcerate communities of color. And yeah, did it get me mad? Yes. Did it infuriate me? Yes. But not only with the system, but it also did that with myself. I was mad at myself, and I fought, right? But I didn't fight back with my fist. I fought back with my mind, and that is how I got my freedom and eventually helped six to seven other individuals receive clemency from President Barack Obama as well.
Let's go to Boston, where Darrell is on the line. Darrell, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Ray. How are you doing?
Okay.
I was listening to this conversation, and I just wanted to, especially about the books, right? You know, I just finished doing 32 years in prison. And in fact, it was WBUI and NPR News and doing the Center for Investigative Reporting that played a big role in getting me out, right? One of the things I wanted to express was the way they go about books. Massachusetts is entirely different probably than maybe the federal system because we do have access. But the theory is this. So when I was in prison, they had a show called Prison Break. So that show was about breaking out of prison. Well, before it came on regular TV, they couldn't prevent it. So they used to tell us we couldn't watch any programs at all that involved breaking out of prison or anything like that. So they would block it. But then this show wound up coming on regular television. And the point that I want to make about that is that when it came on regular television, everybody didn't try to break out. It was just a TV show. So when you think about the education factor in getting books, it's education without application. So we can read everything possible, but if we can't apply it, you know, it really doesn't matter. So in prison, it's not so much about what you can read. It's more about what they'll let you apply. And I think Jason made a good point. He talked about, you know, not only him having life without parole, but when we have life, and I was doing natural life, that means no doors are open. And when you're doing natural life, what happens is that they tell you that you're not, you know, you can't get in this program, you can't get in that program. You're just not part of the life. And so I look at it from those that are doing life, who like me, that may be innocent, or who may have their cases overturned for technicalities, whatever it may be. That's how they see the system, that we, you know, they don't think that we'll be able to apply it. That's the point that they're looking at and saying, hey, you guys are not going to make use of this anyway. It's predetermined about what we read.
Darrell, it's my understanding that you haven't been out long. Can you look back now, and you did long time, 32 years, I'm told, that reading helped keep you intact, sane almost, so that when you finally did get out, you can handle it?
Well, I mean, you know, you want to be able not only to read what you want to read, but you want to be able to try to take in what's going to be your life. I mean, reading for me was just a fact of deciding what course to take, because I'm reading various people's thoughts and I'm taking that in. I'm communicating with the world through that. I mean, that is my access to understanding you, Ray, to understanding people that are talking to me, because it's written down, and it's given me a chance to apply myself to other people's thoughts. I mean, that's what it's about, an exchange of thought. And that is something that the system tries to prevent. They don't want you to be acclimated to the world, because you're in their world. And in their world, it's you're in prison. You know, we have to look at Mein Kampf. We have to look at things that were written from prison, right, that were sent out into the world. So prisoners write as well. So that means we already have the thoughts about things and how we see them. So bringing things in to read is not something that would harm us. It's something that not only would educate us, but it's something that would provide a door to us coming back into the world, acclimating ourselves into the world. And I think they just work hard to prevent that.
Darrell calling us from Boston, Mass. Thanks a lot for your call. I'm Ray Suarez. You're listening to On Point. And Vermilion, South Dakota is next. Sean, welcome to the program.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
I'm much better. I want to thank my African-American brother. I didn't get his name. And my Hispanic brother that has done time. For me, fellas, the book was Tuesdays with Maury. I was a validated skinhead, very into the white power movement, and I read a book in a county jail facing a life sentence called Tuesdays with Maury because of a book program, and it changed my thought pattern, thought processes, and it was the beginning of the end for me. I was lucky enough to get paroled to a federal parole in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, where I was part of a pilot program and immersed in University of South Dakota. I'm now a criminal justice major with a alcohol drug study minor.
Sean, I've never heard anybody say, it's a very popular book, the Mitch Albom bestseller, Tuesdays with Maury, about the relationship with the author and an old teacher of his as the man is elderly and facing the end of his own life. I've never heard it given that kind of tribute. What caught you about Tuesdays with Maury?
I'm going to cry right now. I'm facing some health issues myself. It was just the vulnerability and honesty between the two men, the ability for Maury to express his worldview forever and have it written down by his student. The tribute to the man touched me so deeply. I really had to take a look at my beliefs, and it changed, like I said, it changed me forever, and it allowed me to grow exponentially. I was a three-time loser. I had a parole officer here take a risk on me. They don't take chances on three-time losers. And step behind me, help me and hold me up through the college process, which was, you know, it's a growing process, and it, doing criminal justice, it was extremely extremely cathartic, as well as painful at times. I'm horrified that the juvenile criminal justice system has not changed since I was involved in it. Horrified me that we are still killing our children.
Sean calling from Vermilion, South Dakota. Jason Hernandez, does that ring true to you that an unexpected book can be life-changing?
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt. You know, and speaking about the author Mitch Albom, you know, I read his book, you know, the Five People You Meet in Heaven, and I did my own little report on that. And it was so weird because the five people that I said that I would meet in heaven, they were all book-related, right? I mean, people that I had not ever actually met in real life or probably would never meet, that they had had the most impact on my life, right? I mean, those books, they give you hope, especially in a situation like that where there is no hope, right? I remember going through magazines and books, and they would show, you know, canyons and rivers. And what I would do every day when I would read, I'd either copy them, or if it was my magazine, I'd rip the page out and I would put it in a folder. And I said, you know what? Even though I'm serving life without parole, I'm going to get out one of these days, and I'm going to that place. And here I am now.